This episode of the Better Two Podcast is brought to you by Kitty Mystic and DM Needham, author of My Days with the Dark Muse, as well as Love is Worth Waiting For. Hi, gang. Donna here. Thanks for tuning into the Better Two Podcast. Today's guest is Maria Hill Fortunato. She's actually a doctor. She and I sit down and we talk about symbols, synchronicities, signs, manifesting, reincarnation, past lives, and, well, a bunch of other things. And how she discovered signs and symbols all because of certain things that took place in her life. So stay tuned. Hi, Marnie. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I am doing good. You have an interesting topic. I'm just going to dive right in with you. You talk about in your book, universe signs, and a lot of people don't always pick up on the signs because they're so wrapped up in technology and everything going on constantly. And even with tech, you can get signs. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your own personal experience?
Well, you know, I have an atheist background. And so I really didn't have exposure to organized religion or spirituality, anything like that. And little by little, I kind of moved towards belief in God, because I felt like there had to be something divine intervening on this amazing earth with, you know, amazing people. And it wasn't until I got to a really low
I don't know what happened. You disappeared. You froze, and then
you were freezing when I was talking. I'm looking. I do have a good internet connection, and it happens every now and then, but like once out of like 50 or 60 times. So I do see I have a really good connection.
Zoom has no. So I'm sorry. It's fine. I can edit it out. Zoom does this occasionally, and
that's not okay. Big deal. All right.
So anyway, you were saying you started.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. You know, I really don't have a foundation in religion or spirituality. I was kind of raised in an atheist household and really no exposure at all, you know, to the church or to any kind of concept that there was more to this earth. And little by little, as I got older, you know, I began questioning, and I really believe there had to be some kind of higher power because, you know, the world is so amazing, nature is so amazing, our bodies are so amazing. I just, you know, I looked at it that way. And, you know, I did get involved in the church a couple different times in my life. And I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the whole community aspect of it, as well as just, you know, learning. I'm kind of like a lifelong learner. But it wasn't until I made a significant life change, you know, at age 55, where everything that I knew and I was secure with was gone. So this choice that I made was, you know, to leave my marriage after 27, you know, years. And I, you know, I thought that I was doing the right thing. I believed that I was, and I still to this day believe that was the healthiest, safest thing for me to do, both physically and emotionally. You know, but it was a challenging time. And in the midst of all that, when I could have been sad or mad or, you know, some sort of negative emotion, I was just filled with happiness and love and gratitude. And, you know, I've kind of always been that way anyway, but I certainly was during this time. And I ended up losing everything, which happens in some domestic situations, and it's not a gender specific thing. It happens to men and to women, but I thought I was secure in many areas of my life. I thought I was secure with my home or with my money or definitely with my relationship with my two adult children, but that was not to be. I lost everything, including my support system, you know, because of a smear campaign and false narratives or whatever. I just, life as I knew it just was kind of taken away in an instant. But I just, you know, I still plugged along. I was a little bit in survival mode, I suppose, but I ended up having to have a garage sale. You know, I had to leave this beautiful home that I thought was paid off, wasn't, you know. I had lived for so many years in this neighborhood. I knew that I had to make a change, had a garage sale, and some miracles happened to me. And I was just shown that there's more to this world. And, you know, my experiences, you know, if I had one or two, yeah, maybe, but I had so many. And then that also prompted me on a quest to learn more about spiritual transformative experiences, STEs, as well as NDEs, where people have a near-death experience. And after really a lot of research and years of investigation and hearing other people's testimonials and really sifting through what I experienced. And some of the things I experienced, I did have like a witness with me, which was really nice for that validation. But my whole worldview kind of changed as a result of this traumatic life change that could have been completely negative. And there are still so many losses as a result of this choice I made. But I also see so many blessings. And so that's kind of my journey that led me to kind of a spiritual awakening.
And that is a powerful journey. I mean, sometimes we find ourselves in a situation where, I mean, I'm very much in a similar situation because 2 years ago, my husband died. And I'm at the point now, it's like, well, now you're going to have to move. And now it's time to start living a different life. So it's one of those moments where it's like, so where are you going? What are you doing? And what does that look like? And while it's scary, it is invigorating at the same time, because you don't know, even if you plan it out in your head, it's not going to go exactly, but you do have breadcrumbs. I mean, my friends laugh because I have found things that, as I'm unpacking and repacking boxes, decluttering and getting rid of stuff that I don't need anymore, I'm finding things that I had packed and my friends are joking, like, you left yourself breadcrumbs to where you're going. And I'm like, okay. And I mean, I've always believed in signs and stuff since I was a kid.
Right. Well, I wish I would have had that kind of blind faith in signs and synchronicities. Now I pay attention to them all the time. Even if I question it a little bit, I really know to really focus and see if there are correlations to anything, because these signs and synchronicities are life-changing.
I've had dreams, and when I was younger, I had that blind faith. As an adult, there is that mantra of that ego side, the lower self or the ego, however you want to term it, where it starts going, are you sure you're doing the right thing? Even though your gut's telling you you're 100% on, you're getting signs, you're getting the synchros, but your head is still going, you know, and that's all those tropes and people that came from your past.
All right. Well, that's good to know, because I look at it like, you know, I need proof. I need tangible evidence. And, you know, I seek that. And sometimes, like, I had one experience where the lights were flickering. And, you know, that happens. So you don't really think too much of it. But after it happens, you know, like 20 times, and it's not happening in the room next door, And then you can almost orchestrate it like on command. Like if this is you, turn off the lights when I count to three. One, two, three, boom, and they turn off. And you know, it took me a while, like with that one particular experience with the lights, it took me a while before it dawned on me that there was something else going on here, that there was, I don't know what, but like possibly someone from another realm reaching me and trying to give me a message that they are there. And actually with all the signs and synchronicities I've gotten, there are a couple common threads. One of them is everything is in slow motion for me, complete slow motion. It's almost like I'm stuck in concrete and I can't move. And I don't even ask questions. For an inquisitive person, I just kind of absorb it and experience it, where the normal me would be like, what's going on? And is this happening? And, you know, can you explain this? But in all of these experiences, I kind of go radio silent and I just really absorb and experience, you know, what I'm going through, you know, so time, just, there's like no time. And actually what seems to me to be hours really is only like seconds or minutes. But in most of the experiences I've had, I mean, I feel like I've experienced a particular thing for hours or even days, when really there's no way.
Well, this is the thing. I've had this conversation with quite a few people because I'm a reader, and I've had my own cards read and stuff, and I've had intuitives read me. And it's amazing because for 2 years, everybody has said, right after my husband died, August is going to be a big month for you. Okay, well, COVID happened and we had all this, and August has not been anything. Yet this August, something is brewing. So it's like, right. Time, and this is why I'm saying this, time, whether it be somebody telling you that this is going to happen or you experiencing something in time. I mean, I've had waking dreams where they feel like reality. But yes. That's not, and I mean, I've talked to a dream person on here and everything, but that's not reality at this time frame. It's almost like you went to a different part of time and then experienced this and came back. And I know some people are like, well, this is just crazy. But there are weird experiences that we cannot explain. And science is starting to back this stuff up.
Oh my gosh, science is. In fact, you know, I have part of my research in trying to figure out what I went through. You know, I attended IONS conferences, which, you know, IONS is the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And I even spoke, I was a speaker at the Chicago IONS. Because I'm originally from the Chicago suburbs. I think you're from Chicago.
Well,
too,
I'm not originally from here, but I've lived here for 25 years.
Right. So, so I, Evanston is where, you know, they have the IONS conferences there, you know, or the meetings every month. And they were really game changers because I could hear so many other people and what they experienced, and I could see the threads of similarities, you know, between people's experiences. And time was, you know, a big one where, gosh, it was just so nice to get that validation that what I had experienced with time standing still or slow motion. I mean, I've experienced complete slow motion. You know, it was just really helpful to have like more proof and evidence. But yes, science is stepping up, you know, with studies and bringing a lot of evidence to the table, which is wonderful. And then I'm also involved with SAI, with Dr. Yvonne Kaysen, with Spiritual Awakenings International. I actually met her in Chicago at IONS, and recently just spoke at their conference just a couple of weeks ago. along with other people in a panel that also had trauma-induced spiritual transformative experiences. So it's just so nice that, you know, you have a platform and there are a lot of other platforms where we can have these candid conversations so that we know we're not alone in this and that there are other people experiencing things and other people seeking answers as well.
I mean, there's a, do you know where Quest Bookshop is by the Wheaton Bible College?
Okay. Yes, I do. Yes. There.
Uh-huh. And I walked that labyrinth many a times. And this one time I walked the labyrinth and as I stepped out of the labyrinth, it was the most surreal thing because it was like everything started digitizing and pixelating and breaking up before it went back into whole picture again. And I was not on anything. It was the I'm saying this for the listening audience. It was just one of those weird experiences because the energy walking that labyrinth had shifted somehow and created just this, I don't want to say vortex, but it was just changing the dynamic of what the visual was.
Now, did you put an intention out there
now? I think I was just doing it to clear the energy, to clear and walk and calm my nerves. And I don't really think I know normally you put an intention, and I may have put an intention out at the time, but it wasn't anything related to that.
Yeah, what you needed. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that is fascinating. And actually, you know, I moved from a lifetime in the Chicago suburbs to the Caribbean, where I've lived the last 3 years. So big change. So when I had this traumatic life change, I waited until I retired I had a 35-year career as a high school special education teacher. 12 of those years, I was an adjunct graduate school professor at Northern Illinois University. But anyway, I needed a big life change, and I moved to the Caribbean. And actually, very close to where I live, down my hill, you know, right along the edge of the ocean and up a little bit more, there is a labyrinth here. And, you know, I never thought to walk it, but, you know, maybe even just you mentioning this is because it's been on my radar to, you know, I've gone there, I've looked at the sugar mill ruins and I've, you know, walked around there, but I've never walked the labyrinth. So maybe it's a sign. I'm going to take it as a sign that I really should do that. And maybe not have high expectations that I'll experience what you experienced, but just to have an open mind.
Other labyrinths, I've walked that one several times. And this was several years ago. And I don't know what caused the shift. I don't know what transpired. Wow. I've never had it happen before. And I mean, I can sit here and name weird things that have happened. And it's like, how do you explain that? It's like looking back, there was a getting information and getting signs. Looking back at the night before I met my stepfather, my grandmother and I had watched Prom Night, the original Prom Night back in the early 80s, late 70s. And I kept having the reoccurring nightmare that the guy was after me. And that sounds like, okay, you just had a scary dream. But wait. Uh-huh. So finally I get to the last time the dream happens, I pull the guy's mask off and it's my dead grandfather. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And the next day is my birthday too. So I go and wake my grandmother up. She grabs me, which scares me even more. And finally, we just agree, since my mom's coming to town, I'm just going to stay home from school. My mom wasn't happy. But anyway, so my mom says, well, since you're home, let's go meet this guy that I'm in love with, because he's making a delivery in town. I'm like, okay, fine. And I remember meeting him and him walking away and my mom getting in the car and her looking at me and going, so what do you think? And I looked at her and I said, you're in love with that thing. He wasn't a person. He wasn't anything. I saw him as a thing. And the interesting thing about that is, ultimately, he was very toxic. He had some really bad issues. And I was a sophomore in high school. And so we're talking 15 years old. But yet, when I look back at that dream, it's like, that wasn't about that movie. That was a warning. 100%.
Right.
But we don't always see it. And I've had a lot of precog dreams. So
Right. And I've actually heard too that, you know, your first reaction, your first gut intuition insight is usually correct.
Yeah.
That you should go with that. So if you have some sort of feeling or sense, you know, you're probably spot on.
I agree. And I mean, that's the thing we allow ourselves to talk ourselves out of it. And I mean, there's a fine line we walk because when we get in, when we meet somebody, sometimes they immediately remind us of somebody else. Now, there's two things about this school of thought. Mm-hmm. One is here's that lesson coming back around to make sure you learned it the first time. Or two, this person is not identical to this other person and you need to give them a fair shake. But ultimately, you need to really trust your gut and not listen to what your head is saying. If your head's sitting there saying, well, they're like such and such, and you haven't even given them a shot. However, if you meet them and all of a sudden your stomach is knotted and your shoulders are tense, run.
Right. Actually, let me ask you a question about that, because what are your thoughts about a different scenario with that, that possibly they were someone from a past life or someone that had passed away? What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I believe in past lives. My husband and I, my dearly departed, him and I were so in tuned. That's a whole talking about signs and being in tune, because we were so in tune that right after we started dating, I was working in Elk Grove Village and he was working in the city. And I'm sitting at my desk and my eye, I start seeing like these rainbow prisms. I'm like, what in the heck is this? Never had it happen before. And so I send him an email, and because we didn't have text really. And I'm like, is your eye screwing up? And so he calls me. He's like, why are you asking? I'm like, this is going on. He's like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm seeing.
Wow.
I could sit here and say, gosh, my knee's hurting. He's like, yeah, mine is too. And as soon as he claimed it, mine went away. So I think him and I were truly connected in a past life. And there's other people that I know that I've been connected with in a past life, and I can feel it in my, at my core. And I just talked to a gentleman last week about reincarnation. So, I mean, I believe it. Yeah. I think there's too many things in this world that we can't explain. And I think what happens when we get, when we reincarnate is our soul splits. So therefore we keep growing and going on this journey. And I do believe that past lives, there are connections. What about you?
You know, I believe in that as well. I mean, I definitely think it's an area like with reincarnation that I need to revisit more and learn about more. You know, the one famous case of that young kid that was a World War II pilot and was able to go back and name all the people in his, you know, battalion or whatever it was. He was able to, you know, knew the parts of the plane, and there's no way this kid would know this information. That was a game changer for me, just hearing that story and following that documentary about that. Because there were just too many things that you could not explain away to a coincidence at all. I think there's also another story where again, it was a kid that the parents finally believed him, that he lived in another home in another part of this, you know, island in Europe somewhere. And he was able to find the home exactly where it was and be able to say different things that only someone who lived there would have known. So yeah, I just can't discount that. I just can't, I believe it.
I think part of it is because we are so, from an early age, we are taught you cannot talk to your imaginary friend. You're supposed to conform to this. You're not supposed to trust your intuition. I mean, there is somebody that I know, I am pretty sure that we've had a past life together, that it wasn't the first time, but I put my hand on their back and it was like, I felt this energy charge go through my body. And was like, it woke me up to this different level. I had never had that with anybody before. So I think that sometimes we recognize those other pieces of the people that we were connected to. We just don't know it. There's this pull when we meet them.
Right. I mean, even my partner and I right now, you know, came together on and really unusual circumstances, you know, and but we are so meant to be together and we resonate with each other on a level that I never experienced before. You know, and maybe it's because I'm with someone honest and someone caring and, you know, compassionate and spiritual, you know, very different, you know, than the person I was married to. So maybe it could have something to do with that. But there's just so many synchronicities to our relationship and even people that are connected to us. So it's really cool to think about, you know, it's, there's a little bit of a knowing, I would say, you know, and when I say a little bit, because, you know, I'm still kind of always questioning, you know, even though I've had so much validation with so many things, I just wouldn't mind one more validation, you know, one more piece of the puzzle, you know, to solidify my belief.
I get it. I mean, reading cards, it's like when you read cards, you're reading for somebody. And usually when somebody sits down across from me, I don't ask them anything. I don't ask them their name or anything. I just go. And when they sit there and they start telling me you're spot on, it's like, okay. And it's not that I need the validation, but it's nice to have the validation. Right. It's one of those things.
Yes, because, it is.
And right. With my husband, we work down the street from each other. But we didn't know each other when we worked down the street from each other. We didn't know anything about us, either one. I was in Shreveport. He was up here at one point. I worked at Chuck E. Cheese. So did he. He worked at Kmart. I worked at Kmart. My old landlord was his boss when he worked at Wendy's at one point. That's all prior to us ever meeting. So then I'm taking an intuition class and my teacher's like, you need to take the astrology class. And I'm like, right. She goes, no, you need to, because there's somebody in there you need to meet. I'm like, so for 2 months, I drug my feet. Finally, I meet this person. She introduces me to my future husband, who is her ex-boyfriend, who she's still very friendly with. But so we start talking and everything. And lo and behold, the first night that we actually hang out was Halloween night. And he sees my mom sitting on top of me, but he doesn't tell me for 6 months until after we start kind of starting to date. But the fact of the matter is, when I take him up to his, he's like, can you come meet me for lunch at work? And I'm like, sure. I drive up and I'm like, I used to work right down the block from you.
Wow.
And I mean, I worked there for 3 years and we most likely crossed each other's path. I don't know how many times, but
right.
Didn't see him.
Wow. That's fascinating.
But I mean, I think that's why the reason why I share this is, like, I think there's some things that are, you know, that we go back to the talk of destiny and fate. Some things are definitely destined and fated. I no matter how much you try, because that's a prime example of it. He got married in 87 because it was something to do. And it wasn't to me, but I was working right down the street from him at that point. So had I been looking, we might have gotten married.
Right. But then that might have not been how it was supposed to play out.
So, I mean, I think we can leave a path and come back to that path, as that proves too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, it's fascinating. And I love having these conversations because, you know, just us chatting about all this, I'm sure there's someone tuning in that is going, oh my gosh, yes, thank you. Thank you for saying that, because, you know, I'm experiencing this. And and our conversation can really have a ripple effect.
Well, it had a ripple effect as soon as you said you were 55 when you went through all this, because I'm turning 55 this year and my life is about to be totally upended.
Changing at 55.
So when you were talking about that, I'm sitting here going, well, I'm planning on moving out to Los Angeles, which is a crazy notion, but that's what I wanted to do before I met my husband. So
right.
Now it's going to happen.
So here you are, and how wonderful you're fulfilling that, you know, something, a passion or a desire that you had, and, you know, you probably wouldn't mind missing out on that if you could have him here in the physical and continue your life, but that's not how it was meant to be. It was meant to be that, you know, okay, at 55, you'll be making this change.
I mean, that's why it's like, I understand exactly what you're talking about with the ripple effect, because it's like, yeah, I get to empty out this house and almost all the stuff and decide what I really, really want. And all the stuff that doesn't matter finds a new home.
Yep,
So,
wonderful.
but you've been there. You've been there, done that. You bought the
Yeah,
t-shirt.
oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. I've been there.
So why did you decide to move to the Caribbean?
Well, my partner Rick and I traveled the world together. We really, as friends is first, and we loved exploring different cultures, different lands. We really had an open mind. We knew we wanted to leave the Chicago suburbs. I just had another couple years to finish up my teaching career, and then he was going to also retire at the same time. So we really had kind of a blank slate, and we really considered some places in Asia and Europe, not just, the United States. But we kept on coming back to the Caribbean because he is an amateur astronomer. In the Caribbean, it's extremely dark at night, so you can see the stars and the planets. He's got some amazing telescopes. He also is a scuba diver that kind of put that on hold for a long time. And he's about to make his 100th dive. And where we live right now is we just, grab our snorkel gear and whatever, and we just head on, 5 minutes from where we are, and we can be in the water. So, and I've always just loved the ocean. I've always been drawn to the sun and the sea.
Nice.
So we decided, okay, this is where we want to be. And continued our travels. We still love to travel, but we've just created a paradise here, and we are in the Virgin Islands.
Nice.
So yeah, it's very cool. I mean, I'm someone though, wherever I am, I can find beauty in nature and be happy. So even when I was in Illinois, I mean, I love the prairies, I love the seasons. I saw beauty in everything, no matter where I am. So this is very cool to be on an adventure with all new experiences here.
And I'm sure it helps as a being an author as well.
Very much so, because I wrote my spiritual fiction, God Came to My Garage Sale, and did many versions of that book before the final edits. So it was very therapeutic for me to write, and I don't address anything about domestic violence in there, or toxic situations or whatever. Just and I did make it a spiritual fiction because I really wanted to attract an audience that might not be so willing to read about someone's true experiences. I kind of modeled my idea off of the Celestine Prophecy, which is a spiritual fiction that, even though I'm not a big one into numbers, as an author, it is not a moneymaker thing, but James Redfield endorsed my book. And so I had that kind of support. So I did have that first book done and finished, the first year I was
The reason
here.
why I'm smirking is because,
You are
the reason why
smart,
I'm smirking
yes.
is the day that you reached out to me to be on the show. I had gone through a box and I found a call sheet for my best friend's wedding that it was an extra on. Okay, there's a reason why everybody, and that's how on that set, I was hanging out with a bunch of people and everybody was reading the Celestine Prophecy. So I started reading it. And anyway, long story short, so I found it funny that I found the call sheet and then you reached out that night and you have that in there that he endorsed your book. And I was like, well, obviously she's supposed to be on the show with all this lining up.
Yeah, and it is. You do have to pay attention to all those little synchronicities. But as far as, being inspired to write, I have lived here in the Caribbean for 3 years, and within a 1.5 year period, I published five books in a five book series called True Deceit, False Love. And it's bringing awareness to some family dynamics. It's not an autobiographical book. Actually, the whole series, part of it is a resource reference book. There's poetry, acrostic poetry and free verse poetry. There's a survivor's workbook because I found writing to be extremely therapeutic and kind of making sense of what I went through. And then I also did a word search puzzle book. So because I found that when I was going through some challenging times, just sitting down and doing a puzzle, whether it was a jigsaw puzzle, crossword puzzle, word search, that really calmed me down. And I felt a sense of kind of accomplishment if I would even just get one word, you know, or one piece of the puzzle. And that just kind of helped me when I was trying to work through the negative effects of gaslighting, you know, which is a huge part of domestic issues. And so I did a word search puzzle book. And then in addition to my 5-book series, I am a co-author in 5 anthology books where I contributed a chapter or an essay. And so it was just, yes, being in the Caribbean has really inspired me, but I think it's also, I have worked through so much of the injustice and the pain and, you know, the betrayal and deceit that I experienced, because that's not really who I am. I mean, that's what I had to endure, but I don't want to take that with me. You know, I want to live, you know, a much happier, peaceful life. And I'm doing everything I can to do that. I can't control what other people do. You know, I'm still even back in the court systems in Illinois, you know, back at Waukegan, at Lake County, just because the ex is obsessed with me and has a hard time letting me go. And, you know, even if it's filing false petitions and that type of thing, it's still a way to control and to kind of keep the connection going, even though I've so moved on. And I just pray that, you know, he could do the same, you know, and even though he's in other relationships and has new jobs and new places, you know, I just wish him well. I just, you know, wish he'd, you know, go away and just, you know, move on for himself so that he, you know, but they've got issues, you know, they're not well when they're so obsessed like that. They've got their own traumas to work through, I suppose. Yeah,
my ex-husband, I went to see my 16-year-old stepdaughter for a visit, and she's like, we need to stop by dad's. I'm like, why? Because I have to pick up something. Fine. So I bring her over there. His girlfriend at the time was in the bedroom, and he's hitting on me. It's like, okay, dude. And then fast forward 5 years, she's getting married. I go down to the wedding. He pulls me in for a hug, and I'm like, this is my new husband. That didn't stop him. He corners me in the reception and wants to talk about how he doesn't have anybody to love him and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, dude, I've moved on.
Right.
It's like, I don't understand. It's like, you didn't appreciate what you had. And then now you're.
Definitely. When you had it, you didn't appreciate it, but yeah, I mean, I just, everyone has their own journey. And, you know, it's a very, very sad scenario that my adult children are not in my life, you know, because of parental alienation. I had to do a real deep dive to learn about what that is all about, because, you know, they were adults, 20 and 23. And, you know, lost one at age 20 and the other one at age 30. And I had to learn that there's Stockholm syndrome and that they align with the abuser. And, you know, I had to learn a lot about it. And actually that knowledge helped me come to terms with, you know, there's only so much I can do, you know, but any mother or father that has their normal range relationship completely severed, you know, for no reason at all, based on lies. And, you know, it's unfortunate because it's more child abuse for them than, you know, it's tough for the targeted parents, but it's just devastating because, you know, then the intergenerational patterns are just going to continue and continue and until someone breaks those cycles. And actually, you know, as part of all of this healing journey, I had to do look into my own past life, you know, my previous childhood right. experiences and my relationships with my family. And, you know, I had to see what made me such a target for an abuser. Why am I an overgiver or an empath, you know, to the extreme? And so I had to learn a lot about myself, which was very enlightening. And it gave me a lot of answers to why things play out. But, you know, it's amazing. We can make some choices to get ourselves in a much healthier position.
Oh, definitely. So, and I find it, if you, yeah. most people that study the into metaphysics, they're told, you know, that you picked your parents, you picked your life before you were born and you picked your parents. And, right. and you often go, why would I have given myself that? But then it's like, I wouldn't be who I am had I not gone through that.
Right.
And, you know, when you're talking about gaslighting, my mom loved to do that. My mom, uh-huh. She liked to gaslight, and my grandmother and I would have a version of the truth that lined up identical. Right. My mother's version of the truth yeah. was completely different.
Right. Right.
And
yeah.
she, how you're describing the alienation of the, of you, my mom tried to do that right. with my dad from the time they split. So from the age of 10 on, she was consistently trying to do that. And in fact, she alienated me from my half sister before she was even born, because she started with this whole mantra of, well, if your dad dies in a fire, you're going to only get half now. You're not going to get everything. And I was like, what? And your dad's replacing you, and your dad's doing this. And as soon right, as right. I think my sister was two for around Christmas, he gave her the same doll that I had when I was a kid. And that was the mm-hmm. moment that my mom was right. The truth is, it was really ridiculous. But at the time, you don't, right, I was right. 12 years old. I had.
No, yeah. you're a kid, you know, and you'd like to think that both parents would be, you know, loving and reasonable. And, you know, even everything that I've been through, I believe our children need to have a relationship with mm-hmm. both parents. I would never, you know, say negative things about their father to them. I mean, they'll figure out things themselves. And actually, people have different relationships with different people. So just because, you know, he treated one person one way, that doesn't mean he'll yeah. treat the other person. I mean, there's, you know, right. But parents actually can do that. Like your mom sounds like in some ways it was very overt, you know, she was very vocal about it. And there are some parents that alienate without that. They will say things, oh, I really think you should have a relationship with your mother. You know, she loves you so much. It's just, she's just not capable of providing for you like I am or whatever, you know? So they'll do it in such a twisted way that it doesn't appear to the kids that it's really bad mouthing, but they are, you know, getting the kids to align with them and really slowly break away from the other parent. It's just such a sad family dynamic. And I just am shocked that I am in this situation, but maybe, like you said, maybe I made this decision before I came to Earth and said, I want to experience complete loss of a loving relationship with children or something, because I've always been extremely maternal. And as a teacher, I was always, you know, just connected to children of all ages. And, you know, but it's, I've had to come to accept this is what it is. And, you know, I meditate on it and I pray on it, but, you know, I also want to live life and believe that I'm worth it to do that, you know? To move
my
on.
My mom did the same, which you were saying about the other side of it. My mom did that game too. She's like, oh, your dad loves you in his own way.
Right, yeah, right.
And now that yeah. my dad was not a perfect person. However, when I would ask my dad, so why did you and mom split up? I'll tell you when you're older. Never right. was bad. I mean, occasionally he would get ticked off because she would set me up to call for the child support check. And once again, this is just mental abuse all over. But
right.
when I
right.
hit 40, I finally looked at my father and I said, all right, Dad, I'm 40 years old. I think I'm old enough now. You want to tell me your story?
Yeah, right, right.
And this is the butterfly effect, because when he did, it was like everything shifted. And I was ticked off at my mom a little bit more. My mom's long gone, but I was ticked off. But then at a certain point, it all settles down and you realize, well, both have their own version of the truth. And somewhere in between, and that's hopefully where your kids will get to eventually, somewhere in between, they'll see that both of you have your own stories and that you can't totally buy what the other one is saying. No offense to you, but you know what I mean.
Oh, I definitely know. And actually with parental alienation, it's usually an all black or an all white situation. Like one parent is all good and the other parent and that entire side of the family is all bad. So when you see that kind of dynamic, you know, when someone has absolutely no relationship at all, in their formative years, you know, with one parent, because there's one good parent and one bad parent, you know, that's kind of a red flag to think, well, you know, maybe they're not, maybe they're being brainwashed. Maybe they're, you know, to align, you know, and that's really what happens. Now, when you get older, you know, 50s and 60s and 70s, and, you know, if you decide to choose how much contact you want with a family member, that's a different story. Right. You're not a little kid, you know, kind of caught in the middle. You are making some choices of what's healthy for you, or you start to see the patterns and some light bulb moments come on, you know, even when you're older to say, wow, now it's making sense.
Well, you know, my mom was like, one day you're going to see who your dad really is. It's like, okay, whatever. And it took me a long, long time. And now, yes, as an adult, I look at my dad and I see him, but I also take a step back and go, I look at my grandparents, and the grandparents that I knew weren't the parents that raised them. And that's the one thing that I think we lose that step, that people look at their parents and go, well, I don't know why they're like that. Well, somehow, as we were talking about the generational thing, it all stems back from each generation.
Oh, sure. Sure. And it's important if you can, if you acknowledge that there's, you know, toxicity, if there's narcissism, if there is emotional abuse and gaslighting, and, you know, when you're old enough, you know, to really see those signs, sometimes you need to make some tough decisions just to protect yourself. And it doesn't mean you don't love them. It just means that, you know, you can love them from a distance.
I mean, my dad still lives in New Orleans and I live up here. And I have not told him I'm moving to California, especially after the other day he made some kind of remark about California that wasn't very positive. So I'm just like, oh, well, you have only been up here one time since I've lived here, and not going to affect me.
Yeah. No, no, you're going to carry on. So that's exciting for you. That's wonderful that, you know, you have this opportunity and you're embracing
it. Yeah, I mean, I think we need to look at the way we raise children now. And I mean, not that I have any children, I had two stepchildren, but the way we raise children to block their intuition and block out, we start programming them with technology right away, which isn't a bad thing, but in the same breath, they're losing their intuition. They're losing their creativity at times. While you can—
Oh my gosh. I mean, think about when we were little, we were just said, you know, go out and play. And that's what we did. We went out and played. We created our own games. We created our own forts in the woods. You know, we were just much more creative and independent. And, you know, we didn't need things to entertain us. No shiny objects.
If I was lucky enough, if we went over to my Aunt Dean's house, I was allowed to bring one Barbie. And with that Barbie, it'd be like, okay, can I have a napkin, please? A paper towel? And they're like, why? And I'm like, because I'm going to make a dress.
No, I never had a doll. Okay. I never had a doll. I was more drawn towards stuffed animals. And I was always doing something with nature, art projects and that kind of thing. So yeah, I was definitely not a doll person, but I had friends that did. And, or I have to take that back. I did have one doll at one time, and it was called a Chrissy doll, where you'd press her stomach and you could pull her hair out to make it long. And then you'd press her stomach again, some sort of button for the hair to go back and she could have short hair. And I just, you know, although I don't know if that was my doll or just a neighbor's doll, you know, because I really wasn't into dolls, but I certainly understood the need to try to make little outfits for all these, you know, because I probably did that with the stuffed animals.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, yeah. For me, I was not always healthy as a kid, so I ended up playing inside, so I couldn't go outside and play a lot. So it was like, I had to be creative. And so, yes, that meant art. That meant doing things differently and looking at the world. I remember taking loose leaf paper and drawing little apartment buildings, you know, little apartments on each floor.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that we lived in an apartment, but that was what was in my head, or placing myself in a TV show. And so the creativity was just always there, you know?
Right. And there is something with, you know, this generation that is lost. I mean, it's a different form of creativity if they're doing some video games and creating characters and stuff, but I don't know.
The video, I don't know. I mean, like TikTok, they're putting themselves out there. They're being inspirational. And yes, as an author, you can get your stuff out there. So there is some benefit to it, but there's also, you also have to be very careful of the mental games that come with that, because the narcissism is there. If you're doing it just to get your face out there all the time. Plus, if you're playing the game, and for me, I post every day on TikTok because I do a reading every day, but I don't sit there and go, okay, how many hits do I have today?
Right. And I'm not even on social media at all. So, you know, I am busy enough writing and, you know, keeping my website up to date and having cool conversations with people in podcasts and just living life in the Caribbean. I spend a lot of time out in nature. I live in the rainforest. I love to explore what's going on here. And so I, you know, it just doesn't interest me, the whole social media thing. But
like I said, I go on there, I post my thing, and then I get off, because it's like too much of it is just a time suck. And yes, Warhol was right. Everybody wants to be famous for 15 minutes. And that is what our society has turned into. We have these short attention spans. And how can you focus your intuition if your attention span is like that?
Right. And if your intention is to try to get people to see you, to like you, like you said, to get likes or something like that, or have a big following, and, you know, yeah, it seems like a lot of energy is spent on some external validation as opposed to just internally living life authentically for yourself.
There was a kid that was on the show. He's not a kid anymore. I think he's 21, 22 now. But when he was a little kid, he wanted to be liked better. He was in Australia. And so he decided, as he was entering high school, that he wanted to get the perfect Facebook profile picture. So he worked out and everything. He thought that was going to get him. He got his picture. And he had friends and everything, but he still didn't feel like it was enough. And he used to sneak out at night through the garage window. So this one night he sneaks out, and he would always leave the window open so he could get back in. This one night he didn't get the validation that he thought he was going to get with this picture. And his life was not where he wanted. And he was 15 at the time, I believe. So he snuck out, closed the window, climbed up the roof of the department store, and then jumped off. And it left him he was paralyzed. He's finally got upper body movement, and he's starting to use his legs more, but they told him he'd never walk again. But now he realizes what it was. It was always the outside validation when he already had what he needed inside. And I think that's what we need to really look at, is we can't look at the outside validation of things, because when you go through something tragic like a death or a divorce or something, you're looking for something to change your life, something that's going to be life-changing. So you may buy stuff for people, you may buy stuff for you, you may start living a different life that's not necessarily going to feed you in the long run. It's going to satiate your need right then and there, but it's not going to take care of you internally.
You know, I might have had a little bit of that just in my marriage, because I was so unhappy, not really knowing that I was so unhappy, even though I loved just natural things and art projects. And, you know, I actually would go to garage sales and Goodwill just because, you know, things were affordable and I wanted to have, you know, a nice home or a nice garden and that kind of thing. But I was always kind of seeking, you know, something tangible. But now my life is so different in the Caribbean. Less is more, you know. We live off the land as much as we can. We're very much off the grid and self-sufficient. And we just kind of, you know, and there's not even stores. Like, I mean, there are some stores, but it's a different world here. You know, we don't have a Walmart or a Costco or, you know, a Walgreens or anything like that. You know, we kind of make do with what we have. And if we can make some kind of remedy or, you know, something natural, we go ahead and do that, you know? So I've kind of gone the other way, which is, you know, but I do look back and thinking, okay, that shiny object is going to make me feel a little bit better when really I needed to come to terms with, you know, paying attention to the red flags that I was actually experiencing. And I probably should have acted on them and not have been oblivious, like, oh, you know, this terrible thing isn't happening or this, you know, because I ignored so much because I wanted, like, you know, just I wanted stability for my kids, but I wanted just kind of this perfect American dream family.
And that's kind of where I find myself now. It's like, I'm going through and he didn't have kids. So I have things of his that it's like, his family doesn't want it. So now I have to figure that out. His parents died when we moved into this house. So I have stuff from them. And it's just this, this whole cavalcade of history, but it's outside stuff that we don't need. And I haven't been able to live my life because I have all this outside stuff. So kind of like you, I know that going forward, I'm packing what things really mean to me, the things that I need that hold my heart. And that's really a silly way to say that, but that have sentimental value. Maybe that's a better way.
Right. Yeah. No, definitely. That makes sense.
But the rest of it, I don't need. If it doesn't work with my work, or if it doesn't work with what bringing me joy, then I don't need it.
And then, you know, I've been someone that's always quick to just be generous and, you know, the other day I was wearing a pair of earrings and I, you know, stopped into town and there was someone that said, oh my gosh, my wife just would love your type of earring that, you know, what you're wearing. I took them off and gave it to them, you know, and said, give them to your wife. Like I could care less, like very little that I own has sentimental value. Now, with that being said, I've packed away things for my children in the hopes that someday they would like to have something of their grandmother's or something that I thought was meaningful. But who knows? Who knows if, first of all, if I'll ever see them again, and who knows if they'd even want something like that. You know, like we'd like to think that, you know, things that we think have value would be valuable to other people, but they aren't necessarily. So there's some sort of solace in knowing that if you are to donate something and pass it on, you know, that someone found value and interest in it. And, you know, so the energy of whatever that object is will carry on in a different form.
Here's a silly story that since we're talking about signs, when I was 16, there was one thing I really wanted for my birthday and I never got it. And it was this figurine that had a brunette girl in a nice dress that had the letter six or number 16 in a bouquet. And I really wanted this. So I think it was about 4 years ago, we were at Goodwill looking around and this song came, it was a Carpenter song. My mother loved the Carpenters and I had wanted that thing so bad. So I'm walking around and I'm looking through the tchotchkes and stuff and the knickknacks and there it is. Right there on the shelf. And so I walked it over to my husband and I told him the whole story. He's like, well, obviously that's a gift from your mom because it was my birthday that day.
Right. So wow. Like, right. Wow.
So I bought it. Did I need it? No, but it was the whole, there's a
connection of it all, a synchronicity of it all. Yeah. That's very cool. You were really given a message from your mom.
So, I mean, sometimes things pop up.
Now, let me ask you this, though. Are you going to be taking it with you to California?
Well, see, the interesting thing is she made me a music box herself ceramic music box that I have. She made it for me, I think, when I graduated kindergarten. And I still have it. And part of me is like, do I want it? And part of me, there is some anger still with my mom. And it's like, do I want to break it? You know, there's these caveats of like, do I really need this? So right. I get it.
You know, I've realized too, you know, if something brings you an uneasy feeling, like if you're questioning it so much, is this going to, you know, is this going to trigger me into feeling negative, or is it going to make me feel good when I see it? I think that would be the question to ask yourself about the music box. You know, and it's a little bit different because she's no longer here on earth, and that's something that she made for you. And gosh, you've carried it since kindergarten, so you've had it a long, long time. But I think probably you're going to have to do this with a lot of things to decide, you know, is it useful? Does it bring me joy? Or is it come with some negative energy that's going to make me go backwards?
And I'm going to be fair, because I was honest. My very first show was about her death. She committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the biggest F you can do to anybody. So that's why it's like the other music box that I found at Goodwill that she really didn't give to me almost has more meaning, because it's like, I finally got what I wanted, as opposed to the one she made, because it's just kind of like that woman that was my mother had a lot of issues.
Well, you know what? I think that you've already made a decision here. At least you're moving closer to it. It's not like it's an end all be all, but you know, what I'm hearing with the music box is that you're better off keeping the one that makes you feel good and brings you some joy. And maybe this is the time now with this transition in your life to let that other music box go. And it can bring joy to someone else, but it certainly won't bring you the trigger that you have experienced. And it's almost like you asked the question, but you answered it yourself right here.
And I mean, that's something I have found. I've taken stuff to Goodwill and it's like one item will stick out in my mind that's in the back of the car. And I'm like, I'll end up. I've ended up pulling those out. The ones that are sitting there in my head. Yeah. It's like, wait a second, let me grab this. Right. And it's like, why do you want this? But I'm like, for some reason it was said to keep it. So for now, keep it. You can get rid of it later, but.
Right. And sometimes we put emotional strings and attach them to items, you know, for whatever reason, you know, and we're all guilty of that. You know, it's the rare person that, you know, is into feng shui or that, you know, is a minimalist that just really gets rid of everything.
I did that at one point when I was right after high school. I did that. I got rid of a lot of stuff. And some of it's like, I wish I wouldn't have got rid of my artwork, but I did it. But I think that
you
can't. And that's the thing. You have to move forward. You have to constantly move forward. And it goes back to what I was talking about earlier about the signs. It's like when you see signs and synchronicities, you have to trust. You can't let the past get in your head.
Right. Well, I do now. I trust it now. I really pay attention. And if I doubt it, I've got Rick right next to me saying, trust your intuition, you know, just follow your gut feeling.
I have a whole group of friends that are just like, you're going to do this. Don't worry about it. You got this.
Right. So.
It's been a fascinating conversation. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to talk about?
Oh, you know, no, it's been delightful to just, you know, have this conversation and, you know, just, I think it's really real what we talk about, you know, not only the spiritual experiences, but just, you know, everyday human emotion and experiences. I think it's very, very cool to have these conversations. So I appreciate your interest. And maybe it was synchronistic when you saw, you know, that my book was endorsed by James Redfield and you know, here you came across, you know, that sign.
That's why, I mean, when I saw it, it was like, I was just thinking about Celestine Prophecy today. So in fact, I think it's on the bookshelf behind me.
Right.
But anyway, so I hope you have a wonderful evening and thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was great to talk with you.
So that was a wild conversation, and I hope you guys benefited from it. I mean, as we were talking, you know, there were synchronicities we talked about. And yes, I did find a call sheet. It's actually over on Instagram about my best friend's wedding. And literally that night she sent me a message requesting to be on the show. And she mentioned the Celestine Prophecy. And as I said, that's the book everybody was reading. And I started reading it too, because everybody was talking about how phenomenal it was. And it is a great book, but you know, just how things line up sometimes, it's kind of crazy. So I hope that you guys start paying attention a little bit more to signs and synchronicities and things that just kind of fall into place, fall into your lap. And while some things we may have doubt with, we have to learn how to trust. We have to learn how to believe, because something out there is giving us these answers. Something is leading us forward. So on that note, I'm not going to make this long and drawn out, because I think there was a lot of information for you to dissect and digest in the podcast. So on that note, I hope you have a wonderful day. And oh yeah, if you want to be a guest on the show, drop me a line at Dawna, D-A-U-N-A at Better2Podcast.com. That's Dawna at Better2Podcast.com. If you've missed an episode, you can catch them at the Better2Podcast.com website. And we also have our social media links there. As always, our sound is done by Rich Zai of Third Ear Audio Productions. And well, I guess that wraps everything up for now. I hope you have a wonderful day, evening, weekend, whenever you're listening. And thanks for tuning in. And I'll catch you next time, guys. Bye.
The Better 2 Podcast is mixed, edited, and produced by Rich Zai of Third Ear Audio Productions.